In T.J. Klune's enchanting world, the most powerful magic isn't supernatural ability, but the courage to create family against all odds. Arthur Parnassus returns to Marcius Island, once his childhood prison, determined to transform it into a sanctuary for magical orphans. With translucent-winged Joey Chapelwhite's help, they renovate the dilapidated house for nearly a year, Arthur obsessing over every detail to ensure it's perfect for the children who will come. Years later, this once broken place flourishes. Arthur shares his life with Linus Baker, a former inspector who fell in love with both Arthur and the children. Together, they've created something extraordinary, a family bound by choice where six magical children thrive. Sal, a were-Pomeranian, Chauncey, an amorphous green boy, Fee, a forest sprite, Talia, a garden gnome, Theodore, a wyvern, and Lucy, the Antichrist. Their home embodies the exact opposite of Arthur's traumatic upbringing, filled with unconditional love, warmth, and controlled chaos where magical abilities are explored safely rather than suppressed. One morning, Arthur and Linus discover the children planning something involving Theodore possibly breathing fire. They rush downstairs to find Lucy holding a fire extinguisher while Talia tends her garden, feigning ignorance. This scene embodies Arthur's parenting philosophy, protecting his children while fostering independence. When Arthur must testify about his childhood abuse, he's reluctant to expose the children to these painful truths. Yet Sal insists, "We need to learn about the world, even the parts that might hurt us. We have that right. Hiding from it won't make it go away." This tension between sheltering and preparing is central to their story. Arthur wants to shield them from prejudice, yet knows they must eventually face society's hostility toward magical beings. His approach reflects his own journey, understanding that protection without freedom becomes another form of imprisonment. The children's gift to Linus, framed photographs showing him with each child arranged in a circle with Sal's poem, proves Arthur succeeded where his own caretakers failed. These children feel seen, valued, and loved for who they are. Arthur testifies before the council about his childhood trauma, 6 months imprisoned in a dark cellar for reporting abuse. When officials mention his financial settlement, Arthur counters with records showing 76 accused abusive masters still employed. Does Dichomy deliberately recruit abusers, or do you simply turn a blind eye? The hearing escalates when Arthur admits breaking laws to help magical beings escape registration. "I broke your laws because your laws were wrong." When Janine Rauter suggests Arthur is building an army and implies he might be abusing children, Arthur loses control. Fire races down his arms as his phoenix form emerges, wings spanning 10 feet with bright orange-red feathers. Later, Inspector Harriet Marblemaw arrives to investigate, tall, severe, with painted-on eyebrows and blood-red lips. She believes Arthur has manipulated his way into power, her clinical demeanor clashing with the household's warmth. The children respond with creative resistance, from David claiming to be a 47-year-old stunted Yeti to pranks challenging Marblemaw's prejudices. Arthur and Linus visit 349 Chester Hill Lane to meet David, a young Yeti orphan. Their first encounter shows David performing an elaborate murder mystery with multiple roles. Afterward, he becomes shy, admitting he thought he needed to audition to be accepted. Arthur explains they're actually there for David to choose them, giving him agency rather than treating him as someone to be placed. David tests Arthur with questions about harming children, revealing past trauma. When David comments on Arthur's short trousers, Arthur shares his sock problem, how decorative socks represent how people hide their true selves beneath protective layers. At Marcius Island, the children welcome David enthusiastically, showing him a bedroom they've created in the cellar, transformed from Arthur's former prison into a cold sanctuary, perfect for a Yeti, complete with Aurora Borealis painted on the ceiling. When David realizes this space is entirely his, he cries tears that materialize as ice cubes. Tension arises when Marble Mom misinterprets David playing with J-Bone and publicly declares him dangerous. The children surround Miss Marble Mom protectively, while townspeople cheer for David, showing the community's embrace of these magical children. Arthur discovers Marble Mom on a secluded beach, overhearing her plot with Router to kidnap Lucy, whom they call the Antichrist, from the island through sedation under darkness. This revelation triggers Arthur's most dramatic transformation. The phoenix within erupts with unprecedented force, his human form dissolving into golden flames. He soars upward in a fiery spiral until he detonates in a catastrophic explosion that turns night to day, sending shockwaves across the island. As Arthur falls toward the water, hundreds of fish create a swirling vortex that gently breaks his fall, validating Chauncey's ability to communicate with sea creatures. On the beach, Arthur experiences a complete emotional breakdown, decades of suppressed feelings finally breaking free. When he confesses his fear of parental inadequacy, Linus offers, "You've been strong your entire life, but I think you also believe you're still alone. You have me. I can help you carry the weight." This vulnerable moment marks Arthur's crucial emotional metamorphosis, an acceptance that strength doesn't mean isolation. The children adopt Dad for Arthur and Papa for Linus, with Arthur assuring David he's equally loved regardless of what he calls them. They plan to demonstrate their monstrousness through unified resistance rather than violence, systematically undermining Marble Ma's authority. When Marble Ma demands to register Zoe with Dicoma, she refuses. Arthur defends Zoe, citing her centuries of broken promises from authorities. Sal steps forward, explaining that Arthur was the first person honest with him. Each child then showcases their unique talents, Chauncey's bellhop skills, Fee's intelligence, Talia's gardens, Theodore's button collection, and Lucy's mud people. Sal effectively challenges Marble Ma by testing her knowledge of the children, proving she knows nothing about them despite claiming to know what's best for their futures. In the final confrontation, DICOM agents surround the Baker Parnassus family. When Router arrives to take the children, villagers shield them. She reveals the orphanage was an experiment to observe the Antichrist. Lucy confronts her, sensing Router's inner darkness and empathizing about her father's death. As Router tries to slap Lucy, he teleports away. A photographer captures this pivotal moment. This photograph becomes the catalyst for the magical community's equal rights movement. Prime Minister Carmine announces Router's retirement and introduces Doreen Bloodwell as DICOMI's new head. Doreen removes her wig, revealing stunted satyr horns that were painfully disbudded in childhood. "This was my armor. I no longer need it." The epilogue shows Marcius transformed into a peninsula welcoming magical families. Arthur and Zoe attend Arthur's wedding to Linus, with all seven children at the altar. During their vows, Arthur tells Linus he sees magic in the ordinary in him. Marcius's true magic isn't supernatural abilities, but creating a family where everyone belongs as they are, celebrating differences and transforming wounds into connection.